Welcome to the IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast for couples who struggle with infertility and want to fulfill their dreams of becoming parents. In this podcast, you'll learn actionable strategies to deal with infertility from Dr. Michael Chapman, or Prof as he's affectionately known. Prof is the co-founder of IVF Australia and is a leading Australian infertility specialist who has helped over 3,000 couples realise their dreams of becoming parents. To access previous episodes packed with ideas, solutions and tips that actually work, head over to Dr. Chapman's IVF podcast on iTunes. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him, michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.
That first cry of a baby born after the long journey of IVF remains one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. As an obstetrician and an IVF specialist, I've had the privilege of experiencing this over many thousands of times in my long career, but I still remain moved by each baby's first cry. It signifies the end of a long journey and the beginning of a new life. This is Professor Michael Chapman, co-founder of IVF Australia and host of the IVF Journey podcast. Thanks for tuning in. To access all the previous episodes, head over to my website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu. You'll also be able to find the various services that we provide at IVF Australia. So today, we'll talk about that moment of joy on the IVF journey, the moment that the nurse or the doctor rings you and tells you that your pregnancy test has been positive. That journey might seem as though it's now complete. The journey may be three quarters done, but it's certainly not complete. And there still can be sadness as the journey finishes early. So the statistics tell us that a positive pregnancy test gives you around about an 80% chance of a baby in your arms in 8.5 months' time. It's by no means 100%. So we strongly advise people not to rush out and tell the world that they're pregnant as much as you want to, given the time and effort you've put in to get to this point. What a positive pregnancy test tells us is that the embryo that was replaced has gone through the process of attaching to the uterus, of interacting with the blood vessels of the mother and of the placenta of the baby-to-be, and that placenta is producing hormones that are being released into the mother's circulation, which is what we measure with that pregnancy test. Within 5 to 7 days after that positive test, somewhere between 5 and 10% of those embryos will actually fail. They'll stop producing HCG, the lining of the womb will collapse, and a period will come, and the journey will need to begin again. We generally scan patients just over 2 weeks after the positive pregnancy test. And when we do those scans, what we're looking for at 6.5 weeks of pregnancy is the embryo itself and a structure associated with the embryo called the yolk sac. And we're also at the stage in 99% of ongoing pregnancies, we'll see the baby's heartbeat. When we do that scan at 6 weeks, there will be something in the order of 10% that will be non-viable. There may be a sac present, but no embryo. There may be a sac present and an embryo, but no heartbeat. And that pregnancy has failed. If, however, at that scan, we do see a heartbeat, we do see a normal embryo with the right length, consistent with the dates, we are now talking about a 90% chance of a baby in the arms in 8 months' time. Some clinicians, and I certainly do this, bring the patient back again at 8 weeks, 8 to 9 weeks, mainly for reassurance. Obviously, this is a very precious pregnancy conceived after IVF, and patients are anxious to know that everything is going well.
One of my medical students did an interesting project looking at anxiety levels in women who'd conceived through IVF, comparing them with women who'd had natural conceptions. And around 8 weeks of pregnancy, the anxiety levels in the IVF women were hugely higher in terms of the concerns about the viability of the baby than in natural conceived babies. Perhaps that's not a surprise, but it was interesting to document. And so I certainly have a view that the more we can do to reassure these women, the better. So at an 8 week scan, we should be able to see the standard normal growth of the embryo, now getting heading on towards a centimeter in length, and a heartbeat running along at 140 to 180 beats a minute, and maybe even some movement of the body. All of these are very reassuring signs. And at that point, we can be sure that the chances of a miscarriage subsequent to that 8 week scan is less than 5%. So we're now up to 95% chance of a baby in your arms at the end of the pregnancy. There is, however, still a 3 or 4% loss between that point and 12 weeks. So scans at 12 weeks will still show a tiny percentage of pregnancies that have failed in that last 4 weeks from 8 to 12 weeks. Once you get to 12 weeks, the odds of a baby in your arms is now over 99%. And we can be very comfortable once we get there to tell the world that you're going to be a parent. The causes of pregnancy failure are not 100% clear. In fact, about 60% are due to nature getting rid of its mistakes. That embryo which we replace, which looks so beautiful, in about 60% of them, there will be genetic abnormalities. That percentage is very much age-related. Less than 30, it's probably less than 50%. By 40, the odds of an abnormal embryo being put back are around 70%. It explains the reason why pregnancy rates are lower in older women and also why there's a higher miscarriage rate. We always wonder whether there are other issues, and certainly after one or two or three pregnancy losses, we go searching very widely for mother issues, which include the uterus, the lining, and her own hormonal endocrinology, like thyroid disease or diabetes. Obesity is also another factor in increasing the risk of miscarriage. We also found that in men, there is something called DNA fragmentation, that under oxidative stress, the chromosomal material in the head of the sperm breaks down, and that broken down DNA increases the risks of miscarriage. That can be treated with antioxidants and probably can be overcome. But in most cases, and there's not anything that we can do going into the future in terms of preventing a miscarriage. The one advance of recent years, however, has been to test the embryos. We can now, on day 5, take the blastocyst, remove 8 to 10 cells, and test them to see whether they are genetically normal, and therefore only put back embryos which are genetically normal. Doing this reduces the miscarriage rate substantially, from something in the order of 15 to 20% down to 5 to 7%. So there are still other reasons than genetics that cause miscarriage. That roller coaster ride that we've talked about in relation to the IVF cycle itself is also still there in early pregnancy for something in the order of 15 to 20% of patients who think their journey has ended, but sadly, it has not, and that miscarriage will dash the dream, at least for another cycle of IVF.
And don't forget that you can access all the previous episodes by going to our website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu.
Thank you for listening to The IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast which helps couples negotiate their way through the IVF journey, all the way to parenthood. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.